think I'm going to get my coordinator for the day opportunity to introduce yourself. Other members don't know you, but we have our coordinators are sick, so Mies is off sick today. So, yeah.
Well, good morning, everybody. I'm standing in for Shamir. My name is Shireen Dikirk, and I am the committee coordinator for the Portfolio Transport and Public Works and Environmental Affairs and Development Plan. Bye.
Good morning, Ricardo McKenzie.
Good morning, Tasha Simmers.
Good morning, Pierre Weiss.
Good morning, Mandla Zibi, PMG.
Good morning, Claire Horton, Provincial Treasury.
Good morning, Malcolm Wilson, Provincial Treasury.
Good morning, Megan Bashan, Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board.
Good morning, Yvonne Scaple, Office of the Board.
Good morning, Prima Evans, Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. Good morning, William Bowers, Human Resources, Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board. Good morning, Robin Bennett, Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board.
Good morning, Alvin Matthews, Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board.
Thank you very much and welcome again. There's an apology for Member Beerwinkel, for the record. Member Beerwinkel. Members, the agenda is clear today. We have a Gambling and Racing Board with us that will brief us today on this. The only word I remember was Las Vegas. I think it was a hopeful wish for the overtime, isn't it? But I don't think we're going to make it in this term. We'll leave it for the members of the next term. And then a few on the agenda, and then a few other administrative reports we must set up. I'm going to hand over to the Gambling and Racing Board. If you wanted to do introduction before the presentation, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Firstly, apologies for our chairperson. He's abroad currently on personal business. We don't
like this.
Yeah. And we don't have a vice at the moment, so we have neither board members attending. The program presentation is the training from the University of Las Vegas. And in the tax collection, Mr. Bowers, who heads up our HR division, will do the training section, and Mr. Bennett, who's gambling compliance agency, will deal with the tax collection. Thank you, sir.
That's the, I see the word here, the industry tax collection, and the process is followed. That's the specific one. For the report, thank you. And over to you.
Thank you, Chair members. I'll just give a brief background as to the reasons why the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board attempted to to get training presented in South Africa and not go abroad. During the period 2011 to 2014, the CEO Forum indicated that there was a need for regulatory training in South Africa as there wasn't any service providers present. University of Las Vegas was indicated to be the preferred service provider, seeing as they were the only recognized institution in the world that provides training to regulators as well as the industry. A training and development forum was established amongst the gambling boards. However, that failed to reach any positive results, as most of the meetings, quarterly meetings, wasn't quoted or there weren't enough regulators available to give inputs. Then during 2016, the board then decided to enter into discussions directly with representative of the University of Las Vegas, the International Gaming Institute, to look into the possibility of UNLV providing training in South Africa to South African and African gaming regulators. And the reasons we entered into those discussions was twofold. It was to ensure that ourselves, the rest of the South African regulators and African regulators were up to speed on best practice in gaming regulation, and also to seek a cheap alternative to having to send persons over to University of Las Vegas to get that training. On UNLV's side, they are recognized internationally as the leader in the gaming regulatory training space, and they provide training to basically the majority of the jurisdictions, regulatory jurisdictions in the world. made contact with Mr. Andre Wilsonoff and Mr. Jennifer Roberts that head up the IGI training section, and that's the associate director and the executive director. We had a few Skype calls, and given Mr. Wilsonoff's understanding of the South African regulatory environment, being part of the team during Mr. Mandela's administration that actually looked into regulation in gambling, as well as having served on various South African gaming boards and being a CEO, he was quite well placed to understand our needs. We then agreed that over a three-year period, starting from 2017, we would look at the three different areas in gaming regulation, and that training would then be provided in South Africa, where the South African regulators would come together and make arrangements for venues, etc., and they would then just be paid for, we would just pay UNLV for the presenters coming over. The three-fold approach was started with pre-licensing and financial background investigations. That's the process that occurs when someone makes an application for a license and also for renewal of licenses. The second program was casino auditing and gaming regulations, which focused on specifically the casino auditing environment. And then the third one was a regulation of betting and sports betting. The first training program was held last year in Johannesburg and was attended by representatives from the various South African regulatory authorities, and from given the content, it was specifically just persons from the licensing department. The feedback also was that the information was very relevant, and certainly the skills and knowledge was gained at that program. The discussions are currently underway for this year's training program, which will happen during September, October, the latter part of the year, and as well as a venue that for the hosting of that training. For this year, it is Western Cape and Gauteng that's working together to get the training presented. Last year, it was the Western Cape, so we're trying to include the other provinces as well in the planning process. Just a bit of information on the actual training programs. The program that was presented last year, pre-licensing, financial, and background investigations, lasted 3 days, and it focused on licensing and investigative process within gaming regulation. And as per the slides, you will notice that it allowed attendees to gain knowledge specifically on financial principles, investigative tools, investigative strategies would be applied immediately to improve current investigative processes. That program was designed for law enforcement, government and international regulators, and staff who were responsible for supervising and conducting gaming license investigations on individuals and companies. The program that is planned for the latter part of this year is the casino auditing for gaming regulators, which is also 3 days and is targeted specifically at the gaming regulator process of auditing casinos. As I stated earlier on, Gauteng Gambling Board and ourselves will be the host between the two of us, and we'll arrange all the planning and logistics around inviting attendees and ensuring that UNLV is present to present that. Our program for next year, which is going to focus on the betting side of gaming regulation, is currently only a two-day program, and is going to focus on horse racing and sports betting in gaming. We've been on a few conferences, and it's come to light that sports betting is overtaking horse racing betting. And there hasn't been a big focus on the regulation of sports betting. So this is obviously going to be quite an interesting topic for us to attend. In terms of costs, needless to say, sending people over to United States would have cost a regulator for one individual in excess of 100,000 rand, and that would consider flights, accommodation for the duration of the time that they spend there, and then the normal daily allowances that everybody's entitled to, and that obviously is also dependent on the rand-dollar exchange rate. Having you and Albie send over a persons here, us procuring accommodation locally, cost us at least 50% less than what it would be to send an individual over to the University of Las Vegas. And currently there still is no training available in South Africa, and UNLV is the only internationally recognized regulatory training service provider out there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to the Gambling and Racing Board for the presentation. I'm going to open the floor to members for any questions. Member Ace and then Member McKenzie.
Okay, Chairperson. May I ask this University of Las Vegas, are they accredited in their country maybe, or is there an accredited process? You say they're recognized, but just to understand, the second question, Chairperson, the individuals who got the training or received the training, did they get a certificate or a recognition or something like that to say they've gone through it and they've done it? Also to understand, Chairperson, if there's any university or any other institution or institute in South Africa that you approached or that's taking up the challenge to start with the training in South Africa, that would really help. The first one was last year. You said it was only hosted by the Western Cape, but you presented it. It was done in Johannesburg. So just to link that up, you didn't partner with Gauteng, but you decided to have it in Johannesburg. Maybe the numbers were more in that area. Chairperson, to also understand what is the number of people that's been trained, because it's quite expensive. Although you say you cut 50% on the cost, it's still 50,000 rand per individual for the training, and that's quite expensive. And the concern is always there that are we not training people for America and not really for the conditions in South Africa and what's happening here, especially when you refer now to the sports betting. And you remember we had that discussion as well in terms of the horse racing and sports betting, and still the issues that we have around that. You didn't indicate whether one will be in September, October, and I got the impression you're almost not sure where. But I mean, if you're not sure now, when will you be sure? Because September is just around the corner. And also to understand what will September cost, and what's the number of staff that would be drawn in. Sometimes it's also good while you have these trainers here to also draw in more staff than just focusing on licensing or horse racing or sport betting, so the information is really spread throughout your organization, if I can call it that. So I would like to know who's the people that you actually targeted. Not to say it's not good, I think a training is always good and to keep up, and we've been saying this all the time. How do you really keep up with the technological side of what's happening here? And I would like to understand that part of it as well. Is it purely, what type of training is it? Is it purely lectures? Is it like they sit down and they do? Because 2 days you can't really do much, or 3 days, maybe you can do it in 3 days, or is it quite practical how they do it? You say you ordered casinos. I mean, do they actually go to a casino, take a book of the casino, or how do they do it, or is it just theory? Because I would like to see how they bring it to the ground and really match what you do there and do here, and to understand that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Member Ash. Member McKenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just on the training program, is it suitable for our local regulators? So are we giving input into the program to say these are our laws, please include them in the program? The one question. And then secondly, the this is, it says the agreement is over a 3-year period. So was there not an incentive for Las Vegas University not to give their training material? And do they give training material that somebody can do a train the trainer program, those 2 or 3 people that went over the 2 or 3 days, and then can come back and train 10 or 15 people? Is that the program? And then with regards to our National Gambling Board, the Western Cape obviously serve on their board. I mean, was there no thinking in for them to create training to avoid us having to go overseas for the training, similar to what Member Ace has asked? And then finally, just on the 2-day program, do we get value for money? I mean, 2 days is really short. I mean, I would rather suggest somebody spend the week there doing practicals and visiting casinos and so forth than somebody spending 2 days in a course room and come back. And is there a test involved in this training to ensure that the person's competency is actually tested and not just a certificate on of attendance thing that we send people so far in the States? Yes,
thank you very much. Very, very interesting and important question. I wanted just to link my question to Member Ricardo in terms of the current regulations here and what you've now picked up from last year. And is there any institution that would be able to, UCT or wherever they do some sort of institutional training, you know, to back up whatever happens after the local training has been completed, to formulate it into an academic kind of training for in future for time to come. Any link with any universities for that purpose. Thank you very much. I'm handing over to the board.
In terms of accreditation, the University of Las Vegas is an internationally recognized university. The International Gaming Institute is like any business school associated to university, so they are fully accredited, and each attendee does get a certificate indicating that they've gone through the program as presented by that accredited institution. With regards to a local service provider or pairing up with a university locally, the challenges that the Training and Development Forum had was the issue of curriculum. There was a bit of resistance, and we were in discussion with UNISA back then in them not having the funds available to put together a curriculum. Because there's no specific knowledge at that level for curriculum and gaming training in South Africa, they would have to have sent persons also overseas to gain that knowledge, and there was a constant issue with them also having a concern around putting that amount of funds into creating curriculum for this type of training, and there not being enough over the years persons attending it, that there wasn't a return on investment for them. If you look at the gaming regulators, there's 9 in South Africa, 10 including the National Gambling Board, and we've got about 20 in licensing. And if you take that as an average, all the if you look at sending, and not all are going to do the program, the value for money, the return on investment was not something that what, that any university could consider creating curriculum for. So that pretty much forced our hand to approach UNLV directly. In terms of the training being hosted in Johannesburg, first one last year, as opposed to Cape Town, although we had set up all the legwork and made all the arrangements, Johannesburg was deemed for the first one to be logistically easier for the provinces to attend, as well as the African regulators. If having it in Cape Town, they would have to go to Johannesburg, Cape Town, and it's easier for KZN, flight costs, all those things were taken into consideration. So the first one was held in Johannesburg purely for convenience, and also it followed a gambling conference that was in Johannesburg, so it was also for those that attend the training could then also attend the conference, which would be an easier in terms of cost for regulators sending persons over. In terms of the number of people trained, each regulator sent 3 for the first one, and those were more the heads of departments or chief auditors
or investigators that went. So we started at the top because those are the persons that would then impart the knowledge to the auditors and implement processes that they would have learned there. Although it's three from each regulator every year, it's going to be a rolling process. So after the three-year period is finished, you start again with licensing. Just for obviously for attrition and new staff coming in, and also to slowly get each most of the staff through the various training programs. Whether it's being held in September and October, there are conferences that's underway during that period that be into consideration. The reason for the 2 months being given is that we're still discussing with service providers for conference facilities. University of Las Vegas has already blocked out that period because they will be in South Africa during that time, so hence the September-October period. Getting the logistics in place for a training program where you already have attendees that will attend. There's already been buying from all the regulators for attending. It's a matter of 2 months at least lead time for them to make themselves available for that training. So it's not something where you actually have to go out and fish for attendees. So, you know, it's not too difficult for us to give 2 months notice. They know it's coming. They know during what time of the year it's coming. So it's just the notice period that is required. Who is being targeted at this stage? Each program is targeted at specific areas of regulation. As I stated in the slides, licensing, compliance, and sports betting, and horse racing. And that, as I said, was the senior staff members initially in the first three rounds of training, and then we'll filter it down. Obviously, those senior employees start implementing processes in-house for us to try and make our processes a lot more efficient. In terms of technology, these are process-driven training programs, so the technology involved is there's no on how you know, the technology in a gambling machine. It's not focused on those types of things. It's more process-driven and to the process of licensing. How to do forensic investigations, you know, that type of thing. How to audit in a casino environment. We must also remember that the gambling industry is a very specialized industry. You can't just take someone that is a standard auditor and say, right, go and audit a casino. It's completely different. So it's focused specifically, theoretically, on the processes. And there are workshops that occurred during the sessions. Obviously, they don't go into casinos because we're a regulator. We try not to include the license holders in our training programs. And then with regards to suitability of the training programs on whether it complies with our laws, the training programs, like I said, is process. It's how to do certain things, and obviously there's universal norms involved in auditing principles, in that forensic auditing of financial investigations. There are international norms that apply there. It's not training on legislation. If we can divorce the two, it's not legislation training, it's training on gambling compliance auditing and investigations. They do provide training material to the candidates that can be used so that it can be applied if need be at the various regulators. That training material is copyrighted. So we can't take the training material and then, you know, it's not like we can say we're going to take a program from UNISA and we're going to train on it. You can't do that. It's the same applies with University of Las Vegas. It's copyrighted material. We can use it to apply. We can't retrain on it. We can only use their accredited trainers to do so. The National Gambling Board, my understanding, is more of an oversight in terms of the other nine provincial gambling boards. So training still rests with the individual gambling boards to ensure that we are trained adequately. So we can't really look to them to give us the training at this stage. And the two-day period, it's been 3 days. It's only the sports betting one that's planned for 2 days. All the others are 3 days. And Ms. Poisson is present here. That was there last year. And without fail, every person that attended found extreme value in those programs. We're also looking at University of Las Vegas. They've obviously spent a lot of time, put a lot of money into that curriculum. So, you know, there's a reason for them putting it through 2 days. There's also that attention span. They also have to consider that you're taking people out of the working environment, and it is an industry that, you know, you can't be away from work for too long. So they also have to consider that. If you have a five-day training program, it's someone out of work for a week. So they've obviously taken all those things into consideration. We didn't find that there was value lost in that short period on the one that we have attended. So we take the lead from them in that regard. Again, with there being any local institution that can follow up, it's a curriculum issue, it's a copyright issue. It is University of Las Vegas willing to share that information with a local institution. It's something that we could probably look into getting parties together, but it's not something that we can champion. It's something that the two institutions would need to get together. From a business point of view, if I was University of Las Vegas, it wouldn't be in my best interest to do so.
Thank you very much. Very good questions, and I think we received quality answers. I must admit that. I just want to follow up on one thing that member is asked, particularly on your last point, that, you know, how universities work with their copyright information. I think member Ace asked, are we not training actually people then to leave? Maybe I would say, even take it broader for America, to so that they become part of that industry, because it's a competitive industry. Are we not saying doing ourselves a disfavor, but are we not at risk that after the local training, people will be in a better position, you know, to market themselves in terms of what they were trained for, to work for the industry more from America's side point of view. And then member McKenzie, yeah, sure.
I just want to get clarity, is it a certificate of competence or certificate of completion? And then second, is there a restraint of trade involved with those individuals that go overseas? Because obviously you put quite a lot of effort in there. Thanks.
Just to get back to Mr. Ace's comment, as you correctly, I did skip that. Apologies, sir. To be able to go and work in America, there's already one challenge, because American visa regulations stipulate that you must have worked for a year at a company that is based in America. So it would be an affiliate. We are not affiliates, so affiliates to any American-based company, so just transferring is going to be a problem. And then there's also the stringent visa regulations. So it's not something that we see as a real risk as losing competence to America in that regard. The certificate is a certificate of completion, because there are the practicals that they have to go through during that process. And sorry, the final one, sir, was the...
Minimum period that they must continue to work for us once they come back.
There is a work back agreement with each employee that we send on training, and it depends. It's tied into the amount of money that we spend. So it can be up to 2 years that they have to work back. If they leave within that 2 years, then the pro rata amount would have to be paid back to the board. Yes. Oh no, are you talking about overseas or just that the specific training? Yes, no, there is work back agreements with each person that attends. So.
And then that's just the last question from my side then. What is the, you know, the gap that, what is the plan from the Western Cape and Gambling Board for the initial gap that was identified that we need to fill in terms of a time frame? How do you see us going forward, making sure that this gap that is identified will eventually be covered to deal with the business of the regulatory framework?
The training is presented to keep us also up to scratch on what is happening, not just in America, because this is training that's presented, candidates get sent from European countries, Asian countries to America, and University of Las Vegas also has an institute in Singapore. So they pretty much send their individuals to those two areas. Obviously, our exchange rate doesn't allow us to do that. So we're keeping our staff up to scratch with international standards in terms of processes involved in the various licensing and auditing of license holders. And because it's ongoing, the curriculum obviously would change as things change within the industries. If we look at example, one of the big things now is integrated casino resorts. It's not something that we've been exposed to, but it is something we will now be exposed to because that will filter into the curriculum. So specific regulation training, I think we are filling the gap with this adequately, sir.
Well, thank you very much. Much appreciated from our members. I'm sure we've received good answers here. We can move on to the next presentation. Item on the agenda.
This presentation will discuss the Gambling Board's processes in terms of the collection of taxes of the industry. With the legalization of gambling, the tax levied on the gambling revenue was one of the key objectives with the introduction of legalized gambling, the other two being the job creation and obviously community empowerment. For that reason, obviously the board takes it very seriously in terms of the accurate payment and also the collection of these taxes. Over the years, the board has consistently reviewed the internal processes as well as the external processes to ensure that the tax collections are relevant, practical, and executed with precision. When we talk about the external processes, the external processes, we refer to that of the casinos. Now, any casino process related to tax or any other type of compliance must be in terms of the internal control standards. The internal control standards is a document which basically is approved by the Gambling Board. So we know exactly what process they're going to follow and what action they need to take at any stage while they're conducting the work. During the time of the audit, we effectively will then audit their processes to see if it's in line with the approved standards. In terms of the internal processes of the bodies, obviously with a number of transactions that happens at the casino, coupled together with the limited resources we have, our approach has to be risk-based. Okay, so what we basically do in terms of the board is we have a risk matrix document which we basically review on a regular basis. In terms of that is we identify the processes of the casino which is high risk, low risk, and also medium. In terms of that, what that document says, we then compile our audit program. From the audit program, that is how we conduct our on-site audit. But like I said, these processes and things change over the years. So what actually happens is, on a regular basis, we basically review those things. While it should be noted that the site audits with respect to the payment of taxes are conducted on a quarterly or biannual basis at the licensed premises, these ongoing processes which take place at the office all the time is meaning that when the tax returns get sent in on a monthly basis, there is certain reviews that's been done. We don't have all the documentation there to do the verification, but what we can do is to see that the calculation submitted is accurate, the payment that has been made agrees to the calculation made on the tax return. So we satisfied ourselves with that at this point in time. With respect to the three industries that we collect taxes for, that is bookmaker, and totalizators, one, the casinos, and then obviously the LPM industries, they basically have very similar processes, but there's a number of differences also. With respect to the casinos, the taxes the taxes are payable by the 7th of the following month. The rate is a sliding scale depending on exactly what type of revenues the casinos does. It's an 8% minimum and 90% be the marginal rate. At this point in time, Grand West is the only casino who pays on the marginal rate because the marginal rate of 90% kicks in at 71 million. All of the other four casinos is below that amount. The tax is calculated on the casino hold and amounts accrued for conducting a gambling game. So in instances where the casino provides games where they do not get direct, they're not part of in the instances such as poker, where people play against each other, then the casino have what you call a reiko. So before each game is played, there's already a fixed amount, they get in 150. That is considered as the casino hold, and that is the amount that basically is taxed. With respect to route operators, they also have to pay the taxes by the 7th day of the following month. It is also a sliding scale, the 20% being the marginal rate, and that is for any GGR which exceeds 30 million. At this point in time, both route operators, Vukana and Grand Gaming, they are exceeding that amount, so they are paying both at the marginal rate. And the rate is also on a sliding scale, and it's calculated on the LPM site hold, which basically means is the whatever the it's the payment of the punter minus the winnings back to the punter, and what the site hold, that is the tax is calculated basically on that. Is the tax for the site is collected directly, not from all the sites, because at this point in time we probably have 400 at the end of March, we had 413 LPM sites. So our job is not to collect the revenue from the sites. Our job is to collect it from the two route operators. So it's those people that have to pay the money to us. It's their job to ensure that they get the money basically from those sites. With regard to the bookmakers, bookmaker tax and totalized taxes are paid on a weekly basis. That is paid every Thursday, which is the fourth day of every week. The rates calculated on that, on sports betting, it's 6%, and on horse racing, it is... on sports betting, it is 6.5%, and on horse racing, it is 6%. What happens on a weekly or monthly basis, whatever the case may be, the operators will complete a tax return, and it's a tax return which the gambling board has basically developed. With the bookmaker taxes, we've just got a new online system regarding the taxes, so it's amounts that they've inputted onto the tax return, and it gets things get calculated automatically. They extract this information basically on the tax return from the electronic monitoring systems at the casinos, as well as the monitoring system for the route operators, and in the case of the bookmakers, they have obviously a wagering system. While they extract that information to put on the tax return, is they also obviously count the cash. Now, what actually happens is, you more often than not, is you will have a difference between your what your system say you collected and what your cash is. Their job is to do the reconciliation, and any variance between the cash collected, between the cash on hand and the amount that system did, they must do the reconciliation, and they must tell us exactly what the variance are, and there could be various reasons for the variances. And when something is out of the ordinary, that obviously sparks an investigation on our side. The operators then obviously submit the tax return together with the payment to the board. When we receive they submit the tax return and the payment to the compliance department, payments obviously goes down to our finance department. What then basically happens, the two departments will reconcile to see that the amount paid into the bank account is the exact amount paid on the tax return. So at that point in time, the auditors in the compliance department, what they will do is that they'll do a cursory review of the tax return, seeing that the amounts are paid, the amounts indicated are correctly, the calculations are done correctly, and then also agree that to the proof of payment. Then we'll confirm downstream of the finance department to ensure that the amounts that the amount collected agrees basically with the tax return. A summary then on a monthly basis, a summary of all the tax collected is then submitted to the board meeting. So on a monthly basis, the board sees what the taxes are. Within the office also, we obviously identify trend analysis. Over the years, we would know exactly when are the peak periods for the casinos, when are the low periods, and anything out of the ordinary is basically discussed with the casino, or they need to verify exactly why there is a drop or an increase in the revenue. On a quarterly basis, the summary of the quarter taxes of the whatever industry that is, that would be horse racing or the LPMs or the casinos, is submitted to the relevant committee, casino committee, LPM committee, or the horse racing committee. It is at that committee that the details gets analyzed, reviews, and further question gets posed from the committee to the board for us to go look if they're concerned about anything in terms of those taxes there. Then on the quarterly taxes that's conducted on-site. So now what happens is the auditors will schedule the on-site audit at the license holders. At that point in time, they will go through all the paperwork. So you have your system reports, but at the same time, there's a lot of paperwork that they have to verify. In instances, let's say, for example, a person wins 5,000 Rand at a Grand West. above 5,000 rand, there is an authorization for two signatories to be on there from the casino. So there's a paperwork attached to that. So that that information is sent through onto the electronic monitoring system report. So the report is fine, but obviously as part of our audit, we go to the actual source documents to see whether those source documents are accurately completed. Route operator taxes are conducted biannually. Obviously the tax audits are to test the accuracy of the adjusted gaming revenue. And when we talk about adjusted gaming revenue, is that even though they have revenue at the end of the month, all the revenue they receive is not taxable, because in instance of the casino, you could have what you call unclaimed credits. People leaving money on their cards, people leaving money on the machines. So that money, they're not going to pay tax on it. It goes into an account called unclaimed credits. As and when those people collect it, it's obligated, the casino will pay out that money, and then the tax will be adjusted accordingly on that. And then there's other instances that is not taxable. But it's all those instances that the auditors are aware of, and that those things that we do audit. Of source documents are scrutinized, and accuracy and completeness and validity of those are checked. And then after each audit, an audit report is compiled for each and every single tax audit that has been completed, and it is then so go through the process in terms of within the department. The recommendation is made, and then it goes to the CEO. CEO sees each and every single tax report and makes the relevant recommendation in cases of whether there should be penalties or stricter measures imposed. And then once that is completed, the final letter is sent to the license holder to advise him the final outcome of the audit.
Thank you very much to the CEO. I think I need to say, please don't put all these officials of the Gambling and Racing Board on the same flight to Las Vegas, because if the plane goes down, all this institutional knowledge will be gone. It must treat them like cabinet ministers, I think. The knowledge is good. It's very helpful. Thank you very much for the presentation. Over to the members for questions. Member McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the casino committee, who serve on the casino committee, and the unclaimed credits from the casino, do they give you like a spreadsheet at the end of the month that you can audit that money still there, and for how long do they keep it? Thank you.
Chairperson, just to understand the process, what is the complement of staff who's responsible and which section is responsible for this? Do you have internal auditors or do you use external auditors? And if you do external auditors, who's the external auditors that you use? Maybe you can also explain the role of the Auditor General. Do you get the Auditor General coming in to audit it, or is there external audit company doing it? Just to understand that part. And also to understand what SARS is doing. Are they also coming, and do they have a role to play in terms of the taxes that you get in, or is there no role for SARS to be played here? Then, Chairperson, other provinces, how do we compare, if we compare ourselves to Gauteng, and we look at our taxes that we charge, or levy, are we higher, lower? Are we competitive? How do you determine taxes? Is there a tax grouping in South Africa, maybe called together by national, to look at that you're not, you know, over or under, whatever the case may be? And the question is, how can, especially where you say they work with cash, can people not declare money that they received and not pay tax on it? What's the trail that you take back to really understand that they are paying on all money received or levies or whatever they received at the different places? I'm specifically looking at bookmakers. I don't know how they operate. But do they actually work via a electronic system, or are they just using cash to get in and pay out again and then the question would be, how do you actually manage that part of it, or must everything go through an electronic system that you can offload? Thank you.
Member McKenzie just wanted to
follow. One question. Just on SARS, do they pay, these operators pay extra tax on top of what they're paying? Because I know at some point there was a dispensation for Grand West Casino. So I just want to get clarity on that. Thank you.
I just want to, in addition to the questions asked, want to ask you, are there any evidence or any allegations, because, you know, this is an entity, and what is so unique about this entity compared to any other entities where human beings work, you know? In other words, are there any allegations or evidence that you have of people trying to tamper with the machines? Besides the questions of electronic and so on, tamper with the machines, trying to beat the system, trying to get money in their pockets instead of paying over what they must pay over, those kind of any fraudulent activities or any allegations that you've, evidence that you've picked up in there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. If I may begin with Member Ace's last question first, and that is regarding the system. First of all, none of the transactions are cash over the counter transactions. All gambling transactions are recorded electronically on a wagering system or a gambling system. What I failed to indicate previously, that system that they're using must conform to the national standards, which is part 1718, the technical standards. So when you've got a system that you've developed, first of all is you must have a licensed manufacturer. You must have a manufacturer's license before you can actually even ask any operator to use the system. So the board or national or one of the other provinces will grant you a national license. You will take that system. That system will then have to go to what you call one of the accredited gaming laboratories. There's only three in South Africa. So one of the three have to go to them. Once you have done that, the test report as well as the request to the national regulator for compulsory specifications, they would then look at the test reports and see whether that met the technical standards. They will also look at the each province to see if there's any specifications different in provinces which the system must meet. Say, for example, in the Western Cape, we got something a bit unique to the others. The return to player percentage in other province is 80%. And that's the national standard. In the Western Cape, the return to play percentage, we got it at 85%. So what the result is, there's a lot of games that can be played in other provinces that's not permitted here. So the national regulator for compulsory specifications, what they do, they will look at all that. Once they are satisfied, they issue what you call a letter of certification. Only once you got the letter of certification, you will give it to the gambling board. We will scrutinize it, further look at that thing, and then we will say, now that system is permitted to be utilized there. So there's a certain level of comfort that the board gets from knowing that the system has met certain technical standards nationally as well as certain regulatory requirements within the province as such. The spreadsheet, the unclaimed credits, all unclaimed credits basically are fully accounted for. In most instances, the casino knows exactly who the unclaimed credits belong to, because first of all, they're not working on a cash system, so you cannot put cash in the machine. You've got to put a card, an MVG card, or even if you put a day card in it. Sometimes when you put the day card in, there's surveillance that they can pick up. So over time, they do exactly, they cannot also, even if they cannot locate the person, there has been instances way in the past what they wanted to donate the money basically to charity as such. They have to get gambling board approval on that one. Okay, so it's not their money to disperse as they wish. With regard to the auditors within the department, the tax department consists basically of four persons. That is a chief gaming auditor who is the senior responsible, and then you have three auditors who conduct the auditors, the audit. And there are times where audits can be conducted collectively, and sometimes when they don't do it together. That is for casinos and for the route operators. Within the betting section, we're doing things a bit differently. There is where we got three gambling auditors also there is, and each one of them does the tax audit. So you got the same structure that you have in for the casinos, but they focus purely on tax for casinos and route operators because of the volumes. And in the betting section within the department is, we also have one chief and three auditors, but they do tax as well as other compliance for that operator. The tax audits, the longest the tax audits takes basically will be at Granvis, and that is usually 8 days. Other casinos is usually 5 days for a week that we will do that. But those audits are in the absence of anything untoward, meaning that this is a standard audit. Nothing untoward has been picked up in the monthlies. There's no need to extend the audit, and the scope of the audit as such is. And the audit is conducted strictly in accordance with the audit program, which is based on the risk, the risk management tables, which determines exactly where the high or low risk is. So the audit program for Grand West for the tax will not look exactly the same at Caledon's. Because of the operational requirements, is the risk areas are a bit differently. So obviously we adapted accordingly there. With respect to the external audits, what actually happens, like at this point in time, when we have the auditor general there, what the auditors is, they will try to understand our processes. They will then look at our relevant documentation. There had been one or two instances where they wanted to have a look at the casino, go to the count room of Grand West, see how the money is accounted for, and understand our process there. But actually doing the audit of that, they don't get involved in that. They just want to verify that our processes is complete to ensure that the money basically, the money received by the casino or any license holder has been collected and accounted for. SARS actually don't play any role in terms of our audit, but what we do is that when we do our audits at the casino, we will obviously look at the financials to see exactly what amount has been declared to SARS as your income, because that's the amount that you pay in VAT on. Now, obviously, there has to be a correlation between your income you could declare to the casino and our income here. So that's the extent of our involvement with that. With regard to the alleged the double taxation, unfortunately, that is the case. But in terms of this is what it's more of a levy. You understand, it's more of a gambling levy. So what happens is, on the full GGR, if the GGR is 114 rand, or at this point, let's say 115 rand, they will pay tax to the board on 115 rand. Of that is, there's a VAT already included that basically for SARS as such. So they will pay the gambling tax on the full amount as such. In terms of the casino committee. The casino committee consists of basically board members, which is a number of board members, and the whole intention of the casino committee is for when there are issues which can, the committee is smaller, they have a bit more time, they can discuss and take things apart. So when it comes to the board meeting, they don't have to extend and have a long discussion because the casino committee will advise them exactly what is. Even though obviously all decisions get taken at the board, the casino committee is generally a smaller group of the board members. With regard to how we compare nationally to the other provinces, as it stands now is we, in terms of taxes, we are the third highest in the country. That would be just after KZN and then Gauteng, which is the highest. However, if you're going to take one sector out of that, and that is the Alpine sector, the Western Cape is exceeding both of those provinces, even though both of those provinces have more machines rolled out as such. To do the comparison is, you see there's a lot of numbers. You've got to make the denominators is not the same. Why I say that is, we have something in the Western Cape is you have a number of licensed machines and you have licensed tables. So they pay license fees on each of that, and we can know exactly how much they have in the casino. In Gauteng, they have something called license positions, which is an international standard that they use, meaning that is, let's say in Western Cape, Grand West will have 2,500 machines, and we will have 82 tables. So they can play around like they want, so they can reduce the tables and take it up. In Gauteng, they would have 2,582 licensed positions. So the board is not interested whether you have tables or machines. So you could have 2,500 tables and stuff. So now tables and slots generates different revenue. So to do that comparison, you have to look at the number of factors and just try to equalize it out at this point. But in terms of all national reports, Western Cape is reported as just below KZN in terms of the revenue generated.
Thank you. Anything else you want to add? Anything on Treasury? Any member, and Member McKenzie.
Well, I'm just going to understand the auditors. You have an internal audit team, but I'm still getting to who's the external audit team. You have an external audit team to do the audit itself. And now you say SARS won't do an audit, they will actually do a process audit to see whether your processes are fine, and for the rest they will don't understand actually what's happening. Is that correct, looking at the audit process itself?
No, Member, what I mean is we do the audit as part of our core functions. That is what we're supposed to do. The Auditor General will obviously, through their work, is just try to verify that our process is correct, as they will do with any other function within our organization. But the auditing of the taxes at the casino is strictly our responsibility and our function. When it comes to SARS, I'm not sure to what extent SARS get involved in the work that we do, because we have they haven't asked us for anything, but there's documents that they have, that we have at the casino, so they could have requested that. But what I'm saying is, the extent to we involve SARS is, we look at the tax returns. Your tax returns will basically tell you exactly what is your income that you've declared to SARS. Now, in our mind, that must be no different to the income that you've generated as your gaming revenue. So that type of thing that we do look at. Where we do pick up something, obviously we will approach him. Nothing has basically happened in the past as such.
Thank you. Just this unclaimed credit, I just want to know how much is in this fund, how long do they keep this fund, and who manages this fund?
Okay, the fund will be managed by what's called the cashless department of the casino. It will be, I can't tell you offhand how, if there's been one specific amount that's been there for a long time, but that's something that can be determined, but that is something that forms part of the audit. It's a very important part of the audit, because what happens is, it is income received by the casino, which they at this point in time not paying tax on, because they're not paying tax on it, because it must still be paid out. So it's very important to us that we know. So that thing is audited all the time.
Is this the amount that you levied last year, and are you on track this year? I know it's difficult to say already this year, but do you monitor it on a month-to-month basis and see whether the tax that need to come in is coming in?
Jim, that is exactly what we basically use. From a month-to-month, we look at the trend. Now, say, for example, it's with all businesses, but particularly because in February, it's a very bad month for the casinos. This particular year, all the casinos once again went down, besides one casino. So they seem to follow those type of things. But what actually happens is at the casino committee is they do the month-on-month comparison to last year. And when they're not on track is they provide substantial reasons. Take, for example, at the last quarterly meeting, we had an extreme drop of revenue at Caledon Casino, and a bit of a rise at the same time within this casino. Now, you can't talk about the economy when one is up and one is down. So the explanation is, within the Caledon region, you have a number, one or two big players who are farmers, they're great farmers. The drought basically has hit them a bit badly. So their spend or their visit to the casino has dropped. Now, this is how one or two individuals, well, it's more than one or two individuals that can affect it. West Coast, in the meantime, there's a whole development going on there. There's industries going up, and there's a lot of movement there. So as a result, there's a little bit more footfall that's happening there. So those are the type of things that the board do look at.
Just the numbers to your question, please.
Yes, member.
What was the actual amount?
Oh, the actual amount,
yeah. And are you on track this year?
The taxes, basically, for the collected for the casino, was 423 million. And we basically on track for last year, which is last year when I'm talking about, it's 31st March 2018. Okay. In terms of this, we basically 2 months into the new financial year, and everything's in terms of the budget amount, they are there.
So I'm not only referring to casinos, I'm referring to all four. So let's understand, what's the total amount that you actually received in terms of tax?
In terms of tax, it's about five. I've got other figures collected in here, but so it's around about 550 million.
550.
550.
Thank you. Just a question from my side. The question I've asked earlier on in terms of you have all the regulations, but are there people who's trying to avoid it, to do illegal things? And maybe because you are a legal person here, that are there any legal cases involved in terms of the industry that the board have to take up with the stakeholders, that people are not complying and trying to do illegal things, but in the industry?
Chair, would that be employees of license holders?
Yeah, whoever is your stakeholders or clients in the business.
The cost of the license and the process to obtain the license is a lengthy and laborious process. And when you have an issue or a non-compliance with a license in the Western Cape, it affects your license or your shield in other provinces. So license holders go to great lengths to ensure that they comply. We're dealing with humans, so there are from time to time issues of non-compliance. Those things are fully investigated. License holders basically have to give us reasons as to why they're non-compliant. So those things, so we're fairly happy about those issues of non-compliance and that the license holder do address it. Clearly what the board will look at is if there is a regular non-compliance about a certain thing and there's no measures being put in place to try to rectify it, it gets addressed a bit differently. But at this point in time, everything, there's no concerns for the board.
Thank you very much. Anything on Treasury to add? Nothing? Thank you very much. Then, members, I think we've completed this part of the agenda. I just would like to take the opportunity to thank the leadership of the board and all the officials and for the hard work and the... I think we learn ourselves about the industry by inviting you here. And I'm sure that the industry itself is aware of the challenges and that you know you would come forward with answers how to deal with the challenges. But thank you very much for the quality work you are doing. Appreciate it. Anything in closing from your side?
Just to thank you for this opportunity and give information to Mr. McKenzie on the... Thank you.
Sorry, there's a question.
Yeah, can I quickly ask if they met with the Department of Public Works already? Remember 2 weeks ago you met with them and they want to form some steering committee and something. You're a dark team, yeah.
maybe someone, I don't know if the same task team here that serves on that task team, but maybe you want to answer.
Chair, if I may, yes, we've met. After we had our session here, we've met with the Department of Public Works to create a task team. The process for all of the offers is now done until the 31st. We have requested from Public Works to set up a meeting. First, we agreed on a process to follow, to shortlist the offers, and then obviously to go visit the site. But till now, we have not received any feedback from them.
Yeah, leave it in a month's time. I think we should have the casting back here. But thank you very much, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you for treasure as well.
Yep.
Much appreciated. Thank you. Members, we can continue with our agenda. Point 2, adoption of the minutes. Point 2.1, the minutes of the 16th of May. I think it refers to the accommodation and the preferential procurement process, which we must all invite. I think Treasury back. Remember, there was a good presentation, but we never had time to go through questions, so we will put that on the agenda. That's the two main points. Out of the minutes of the 16th of May, can we adopt? Move on. Member Ace?
Just the one thing, and maybe it's a principal decision on page 3. You will see the minutes of the 4th of May.
Yeah.
Chairperson submitted the draft committee minutes, which were considered and adopted with amendments, and that's the issue.
The amendments.
What amendments did we agree to? Because the person reading this, even a month from now, will not know
what
whether we amended the whole document or part of the document or just the sentence there. Maybe in future we can just look at that, the chairperson, please.
Thank you.
perspective, and then we can move to the annual report and make those adjustments we've made according to our agreement.
We've made the amendment as per committee. On the annual report, is there anything else? Member 8?
Just on page 2. Okay. Under second paragraph on the oversight activities, and maybe you can just help me with a reading of that. You will see there the third line, the Standing Committee on Finance evaluated four candidates in order to assess their suitability for recommendation to the Western Cape Gambling and Racing Board.
Yeah, I think the word, we brought the word recommendation in because it was appointment, the other one. So we changed it because we don't appoint, we recommend to the minister.
To the MEC, to the minister. Just to make sure that he's the one that appoints the people, eh? Yeah.
We move to the tracking document 2.3. There was a question on whether it should be quarterly and, you know, where do we start, where do we end. And I think what this one has also changed, I think we then decided to take it right up, I think it was the 16th of, was it? March the 15th, and we included the 4th of May as well, so we added to bring it up to date. So it's actually it's a work in progress document, and it's a moving target in terms of date as well. You know, it doesn't have to be specific. Or per quarter, I think, but that was the question, is it per quarter, or how do we define it in terms of where do we start and where do we end if we give dates. Any comments, members?
Let me not comment on that part of it. Let me rather refer to page 12, Wednesday the 16th of May. You with me, Chairperson?
Yeah.
The agenda item under number 1, we had the briefing by the Provincial Treasury on the preferential procurement. Now, if you look at decisions, you will see there's a reflection on the decision in terms of accommodation. Now, that's number 2, you will see there's accommodation on the agenda item, and you will see on the decision there's preferential procurement. I think the two were just copied and pasted the wrong way around there.
Thank you, Member. I see that. Thank you. Member, can we move on? Agree to that amendment, Member Summers. Thank you, Member H, for that. And then the program. I think there's this one. Myself and the coordinator, we filed in August, September. I think we only left out, depending on what's happening, you know, in the next 2-3 months, what we need to bring back. In November, I think we're still going to have.
Chairperson, I'm just concerned, and I'm just asking the question on page 2 whether that's correct. Looking at the 20th of June, we must still look at July to September and October and December up to March, all those quarterly reports. Is that correct that we almost like have the full year or 9 months of the last year's quarterly reports outstanding? Maybe you can confirm that. Then on the 15th of August, there's reference to subordinate legislation. I recall I did refer to that. I don't think we must specifically specify to fees and cost structures, but just to any subordinate legislation that came into effect. Yeah. Chairperson, then on the 12th of September, there's again a reference to the preferential procurement process. Really, Chairperson, we went through a long session last time in terms of the preferential procurement, and you actually allowed the department to really go into all the detail. So I don't think it's necessary around this one. Chairperson, you know the MEC and the Treasury is also responsible for local government in terms of the MFMA. There's MEC Mayor, who's the financial side, and Bridell, who's more the process structural, that side. I think we will have to get somehow a report on local government and outcomes on local government and audit processes in local government. You know, there's been much said in the news around that. Chairperson, and I think it's also important, and I don't know whether you were aware of that.
Remember, do you want to refer to underspending in particular, or what type
of local
government?
Just the audit outcomes of local government.
Or
let's call it the financial performance of local government. We also lately had a lot of discussion, Chairperson, and we all know, and that was the question I've asked MEC Mayor last week as well, in terms of underspending, in terms of capital expenditure. So I think we need to engage them as a department in terms of local government and get some grip of on what's actually transpiring there. I think it would be a good opportunity to understand whether all budgets have been approved and all budgets are on track. Because, you know, end of May, but then really the end of June is the approval time of all budgets, and they kick in on the 1st of July. So we can pick up on any problem there. Then, Chairperson, and I want to ask this question because maybe we can slot this in. Yesterday there was a briefing by Provincial Treasury, meaning the one that reports to us, at the Select Committee of the NCOP. Are you aware of that? And there was quite negative response, or some negative response. And I would just like to get an understanding, and maybe Treasury can come back to us and make that same presentation to us. You see, it's always difficult that if you read in the newspaper about the presentation that was made at National, and you have not received that own presentation or that in your own, let's call it your own oversight committee. And now we must read that in the newspaper. So, are you aware of that? And maybe you can pick up on that for us, please, Chairperson.
Well, thank you, Member Member Summers.
I'll respond
to the other things now, Member.
I actually agree with Member. It's most specifically when it comes to local government and their budgets. Because if we can get a Section 71 report analysis for all the municipalities, that would give us exactly the heartbeat which I believe the Member is looking for a municipality.
Thank you. I think on the first point on the quarterly reports, I think I really do not want to speak on behalf of Treasury, but I think, as we know, most of the reports, like the Budget Committee, goes to Cabinet, you know, in terms of reporting. And I think there's a slowdown, but a delay in terms of getting it all get ready, and then to the committees. I think that's one of the reasons. Second thing about we will note the subordinate legislation as you raised, we will do that. On the preferential procurement, it was about the point early in the minutes where we said we allowed him to do a full presentation, but we wanted to follow up on questions at a particular session. I think that is why it's in here. We wanted to engage with them on that, and we needed another session to do that. I think that's why it's on the. I don't know if you want to further comment, should we pursue it, or should they deal with it differently, ask questions and get reports, or what is your view on that?
My request then would be, if there's a need like that, and I think there was last time maybe, that we really try and cut the time, and not put one full day aside for that. And then, you know, there's such a lot of other things happening that we're actually missing out on. And, you know, there was a lot of work in progress in terms of what was reported last time here by the Acting Chief Director. So I would like you and the Secretariat maybe to consider whether it's really critical at this stage. You see, if we only start asking questions in September, I mean, to link the presentation and the questions, the time lapse is also a bit of a challenge in itself, yes.
Thank you.
We will
consider that, and we will make it short if we bring them here and then include more items as well if we can come. Yes. Do that. in terms of the points raised about the underspending, the budget or budget approval, the financial performance, we will slot that in as well. And then in terms of the NCOP, the select committee, yeah, invite all provinces, so it's a standing visit to NCOP on an annual basis, but I think I'm just aware of the meeting, but I'm not aware of the content, so it's good that we invite them to update us as well as to what's happening. Shall we get a recommendation to approve the standing committee program for now? Thank you very much. And then the quarterly reports that we have here, the committee's report. I think the one item that was raised last time is the finance. The one thing I have to report on is that I got a copy of the quotation, the one quotation of the company that actually the company was appointed to do the catering for us. Just for the members' information, one meeting is about 1,125. This one specifically we received from the last time for one meeting. What is actually happening now, and I think I need the permission of the committee to draft a letter to Parliament, is that they want to bring in more smaller business and companies. It creates an administrative nightmare where the official have to call for quotations for the next meeting. And I think we need a longer sustainable time, say a quarter or so, for one company to, because as Member A said with my conversation with him, the one company doesn't know if he will have that same contact next 2 weeks' time.